Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Done, and I guess we need to get to the first story.
and considering the first story, perhaps we should, you know, tone it down a bit.
Yes.
Yeah, probably.
Get
so.
Fire out now while you can.
All right. Let me close.
And scene.
Anyway.
Wow.
So on to the first story, and the first story is an unfortunate addendum to a story we had last week about Bill Pasternak from the Amateur Radio Newsline, WA6ITF. We reported that he had been in critical condition in the ICU for some time. He's been battling illnesses off and on for a while now, and we learned from Facebook that, unfortunately, things did not work out well for Bill. Cheryl posted on Facebook a few days ago this message from Don Wilbanks, who says, "A dear friend of mine has left us after a long struggle with his health. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, has taken his light into another room. Bill touched lives all over the world through amateur radio. He was like a big brother, an uncle to me. He was my mentor. He was my friend. In addition to being president and co-founder, writer, producer of the Amateur Radio Newsline, Pasternak belonged to the ARRL, the Radio Club of America, and the Quarter Century Wireless Association. He has also enjoyed flying, including stints getting on the air from thousands of feet up. He was the only person ever chosen to receive the Dayton Hamvention Special Achievement Award in 1981 and the Radio Amateur of the Year Award in 1989. In 1995, the league presented him with an ARRL National Certificate of Merit in recognition of his contributions to the furtherance of the goals of the amateur radio service. And he's survived by his wife of 43 years, Sharon, KD6EPW. So all of our thoughts go out to Bill's family and friends during this time. Well, we're sorry for their loss. So in observance for that, we will have a brief moment of silence. Thank you, everybody. And sorry to see that Bill didn't survive his problems, but he left a lasting legacy on the amateur radio community.
Yeah, I was shocked because last show we reported that he'd been into the ICU, then he came out, everything was looking good, and it was a day or two later that I saw this post on Facebook. I was shocked. I just couldn't believe it, but sometimes things change in a heartbeat.
But turning to some happier news, which we should probably do quickly, it is field day time again. So,
yay!
Yes, it's coming up next weekend, the last weekend in June, which is a good time to have field day. Weather is usually nice. It's warm. People can get out there and do stuff. So, Pete.
Next weekend. It's 2 weekends.
Oh, that's right. 2 weekends from now.
Yeah. Each year, the ARRL, the Amateur Radio Relay League, sponsors field day as a, what they say, is a picnic, camp out, practice for emergencies, an informal contest, and most of all, fun. Takes place every year for a 24-hour period during the fourth full weekend of June. So for 2015, the event's going to take place during a 27-hour period from 1800 UTC on Saturday, June 27th through 2100 UTC on Sunday, June 28th. Those who are setting up prior to 1800 UTC on the 27th can operate only 24 hours. In conjunction, or as part of the contest, the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation, also known as AMSAT, is promoting its own version of Field Day for operation via the amateur satellites. And that's held concurrently, as I said, with the ARRL event. The ARRL event. Yes, that's what I said. So if you're considering only the FM voice satellite SO50 for your AMSAT Field Day focus, don't, unless you're simply hoping to make one contact for the ARRL rule bonus points. The congestion on FM LEO satellites is usually very intense anyways, but it was so intense in prior years that they say that we must continue to limit their use to one QSO per FM satellite. This includes the ISS, the International Space Station. You'll be allowed one QSO of the ISS's operating voice. You'll also be allowed one digital QSO with the ISS or any other digital non-store and forward packet satellite, if operational. So many good contacts can be made on the linear transponder satellite, including AO73, FO29, and AO7. During field day, the transponders come alive like 20 meters on a weekend. Like I said, depending on where you're living, I know whenever I'm checking onto the satellites, they're busy as heck anyway. So I can only imagine during field day, those who are trying to get the satellite contact for the bonus points or just for saying you got on during field day, it must be phenomenal. I haven't tried yet during field day, but it must be pretty interesting, even just to listen to. So they continue. The transponders on these satellites will support multiple simultaneous SSB or CW contacts. The 2015 AMSAT Field Day is open to all amateur radio operators. Amateurs are to use the exchange as specified in ARRL rules for the regular field day. The AMSAT competition is to encourage the use of all amateur satellites, both analog and digital. So all your field day information can be found on the ARRL's website, www.arrl.org/fieldday. AMSAT field day information is also posted on the website at www.amsat.org/?page?. The link will be in the show notes, or you could just go to the amsat.org page and follow the links to their field day information. So, Russ, any plans for a field day this year?
I don't really have any plans for field day this year. If I do anything for field day, I'll just probably operate as a, one Delta or one Echo, whatever the local station is, from here out of the house, since I do actually have some HF gear I can use. I do have plans on the 27th, but since field day is a 24-hour thing, it could work a little bit.
One thing I did find, apparently there are some issues with the space station. So they do not have, they feel that there will not be any way to contact them, either voice or digitally, for field day.
All right. Well, you can just check on AMSAT's website, I'm sure, and they'll most likely have up-to-the-minute information. So. Yeah.
So what are you doing, Pete?
Well, normally, and for the past few years, we've been, our club has been doing a somewhat elaborate field day outside in the field, trailer, antennas up in the air on a 40-foot extendable hydraulic pole, hot dogs and the whole bit. But this year, I guess with austerity measures, the club's not doing anything. And I was a little disappointed because I like the whole idea of the club getting involved. And you know, it's like a party. It's like a big picnic barbecue. The kids would come out. So I'm going to, since we're not having one, since the club's having nothing, I'm just going to do it at a friend's apartment. My friend lives on a fourth floor apartment building, so, and he's got a tree just across from his balcony, so we're just going to have fun throwing an antenna across the tree and operating from his balcony. So it's actually going to be the first time that I'm doing a field day on my own. I've always done them with clubs or other entities, so I'm kind of looking forward to operating as a one alpha.
I would be operating as a one delta.
Well, we could probably arrange something because my equipment will probably be up for the 24 hours. I won't be operating for the 24 hours. I'm not in it for the points of the contest. I just like the traffic and all of the hullabaloo going on during field day, and it's just fun. And at nighttime, when 40 kind of comes alive and a lot of people have gone to bed, it kind of becomes more interesting because during the day, people, it's like, call sign category 5-9, call sign category 5-9. It gets tedious. But at nighttime, things tend to get a little bit more relaxed. And people, you're operating 15 Delta. Tell me about your setup and your antennas. And people actually talk about the technical aspects of what they're doing and the social aspects. And it's a little bit more laid back. So I kind of like to operate at night. And, I'll usually do 2 or 3 hours in the wee hours of the night. But we can probably arrange a QSO. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, that does sound pretty cool. So we'll work on that between now and 2 weeks from now.
Sounds good.
All right. So anyway, get into field day. Even if you don't operate generally, find a club, find a local event, operate from your house, whatever you got to do, get on the air for field day.
Petro, VA2 XMX, says that, let's see, members of my club are showing lack of interest as well. So, and it seems to be, you know, the kind of, we've had this conversation before where the clubs are, you know, less and less active in various areas. Some are very active, but overall it seems to be, interest seems to be dwindling for some. Some of the clubs around here are very, very active. However, me being the lazy butt that I am, I don't usually try to go across the city and see what's happening in the other clubs, although perhaps I should. But, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to doing my own thing this year.
Yep, sounds good. And I have never operated on my own for field day ever, so this, it would be kind of cool for me to do that as well. So, next story. And Cheryl, you dug this one up, as you did with most of these, so go ahead and read this one.
Didn't I do all of them?
No, not all of them.
Oh, okay. Just checking. All right. So I did 99% of them. Anyway, I found information on a free online course on satellite remote sensing. There's a new online course on satellite remote sensing made available by the European Space Agency at www.futurelearn.com. It's called Observing Climate Change from Space. There's no fee, and it's state-of-the-art about what satellites do in measuring climate and other factors from space. It's very approachable. You don't need anything like a PhD in rocket science to understand it. Absolutely fascinating and well worth doing. So, we're going to do it. Hope you will too. Lesson 1 started on Monday, June 8th. And you can go to futurelearn.com and look for Observing Climate Change from Space.
So you guys are doing this.
Oh, well, okay. I am. So
I plan on doing it too. It sounds interesting.
See, I went to the website because I thought it was really interesting too, and I couldn't find this specific course that you were talking about in the notes because I actually read the notes tonight before coming onto the show.
Ooh.
Ooh. And I couldn't find this specific course, but because it started on June 8th, maybe you can't register for it anymore. I'm not sure. That being said, I found a whack of other courses that are free and online. I mean, there's everything from history, preparing for university, archaeology, discovering dentistry, you know, football, English, writing. There's all kinds of stuff. There was a list of probably about, you know, 50 free courses that you could sign up for. Most of them are starting between mid and the end of June, run for an average 3 weeks to 8 weeks. And, you know, there's all kinds of, I mean, beginning robotics. Let's see, what are some of the other ones that I came across? How to succeed at writing applications. I mean, there's even some techie stuff in here. Explore filmmaking from script to screen, blah, blah, blah. Basic science, cracking mechanics. Anyways, I won't read them all, but go to the website. There's a whack of stuff here that you could learn, and it's free, you know. Most of the courses are about 3 hours per week, 2 to 3 hours per week, and a lot of them will give you a certificate. I'm not sure what the validity of the certificate is and if you could use it for, you know, any other ongoing education that you're taking, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, this is cool. There are several of these kind of sites coming up, and actually one that I've been using for some time is Coursera, C-O-U-R-S-E-R-A. It's another one just like FutureLearn, and they do the same thing, and they're all taught by college professors around the world, which is really cool, and they have some very, very in-depth topics. I've actually done ones from things as widely varied as Einstein's theory of relativity and learning how to play the guitar.
That was one course?
That was not one course. Anyway, check out FutureLearn, check out Coursera, find all the e-learning sites you can. They're all great. And a lot of them provide you with the opportunity for certification. Excellent. So anyway, moving on
Knowledge is good.
Knowledge is excellent. So moving on to open source topics, we have some interesting ones. The first one is the White House sides with Oracle. Boo! Telling the Supreme Court that APRs are copyrightable. Boo. Man, copyright law is just getting way out of hand. But anyway, the Ars Technica reports that the United States Justice Department has sided with Oracle in its dispute with Google. The dispute centers on Google copying names, declarations, and header lines of the Java APIs in Android. Oracle filed suit back in 2012, and a San Francisco judge back then sided with Google. Yay! The judge ruled that not that siding with Google is necessarily a good thing, but in this it is a good thing. The judge ruled that the code in question cannot be copyrighted. Oracle prevailed in an appeal, however. Federal appeals court ruled that declaring code and the structure, sequence, and organization of the API packages are entitled to copyright protection. Obviously, these people are idiots. Google maintained that, editorializing, by the way. Google maintained that the code at issue is not entitled to copyright protection because it constitutes a method of operation or system that allows programs to communicate with one another, which is a good argument. The people who voted against it are just idiots, editorializing. So anyway, that story came from LWN, and I don't know where this is going, but I have a feeling that it's going to negatively affect programming and programmers very, very soon. Be wary of APIs and any code anymore, because the government wants to have a hand in everything. It's just getting nutty. Nutty out there.
Surprise, surprise, huh?
Yeah. Pete, go ahead and read the next one here, since we don't want to talk about all the bad things about copyright law. That's a whole show in itself, or, like, that's a whole podcast in itself, actually. Actually, there is a podcast about that. It's called, I can't remember what it's called. What the hell is it called?
Don't look at me.
It's Free as in Freedom. And everybody who likes Linux and who likes software freedom and things like that should be listening to Free as in Freedom. Great podcast. So, enough about that. Anyway, Pete, next.
Well, it's good that you went on, because it gave me a chance to finish my cookie.
And subscribe to Free as in Freedom, right?
And yes.
Of course, right.
Of course. All right. Free embedded Linux training materials demystify BuildRoot. Free Electrons has posted free Free Electrons has posted free details. It would be ironic if Free Electrons had posted details that were not free. Anyways, I digress yet again. Apologies. Free Electrons has posted free detailed training materials for its course on building an embedded Linux project on a BeagleBone Black SBC using BuildRoot. Last November, Linux training firm Free Electrons posted free training materials for a three-day training course on building an embedded Linux project using, is that pronounced Yocto or Yocto? No, Yocto project and Open Embedded. Now the company has published similar training materials for a course about using BuildRoot. Once again, with the target platform being the BeagleBone Black. BuildRoot is simple, they say, efficient, and easy to use tool to generate embedded Linux systems through cross-compilation. The source is from Linux Gizmos, if you're interested in reading the whole article, or you could go to buildroot.uclibc.org.
Obviously, this is going to appeal to the more techie among our listeners, but if you are definitely into kit building and Linux open hardware and things like that, something like BuildRoot might appeal to you. So we try and cover everyone on this show if we can.
Have you used BuildRoot?
I have not. I have had no reason to use such a thing, but maybe someday.
Now's your chance.
Maybe so.
Or not.
Or not.
And I've heard of BuildRoot. I have no idea what the Yocto project is, however.
No, I don't know what that is either, and I didn't have a chance to look it up.
Okay, so Yocto is an open source embedded Linux system. It's not an embedded Linux distribution. It creates a custom one for you. Open source collaboration project that provides templates, tools, and methods to help you create custom Linux-based systems for embedded products, regardless of the hardware architecture.
So for the super geeks among us, there you go. Information you can use. Moving on from that to Microsoft. Uh-oh, we're talking about Microsoft.
Again?
Yeah, I guess so. Microsoft says to Linux users, explain yourself. Redmond wants to know what Linux better. You know, it seems like as big a company as Microsoft is, if they wanted to know Linux better, they could just find out. But anyway, they want to know Linux better so they can build monitoring tools for Penguinistas. I don't know that I've ever heard that term before, but
I have.
I guess us Linux folks are Penguinistas. Microsoft wants to get better at monitoring Linux. Somehow that sounds ominous. But this article is written as if that's a good thing. Redmond on Tuesday took the covers off a new Linux virtual machine monitoring tool. Khalid Moss of Microsoft says a significant number of virtual machines on Azure today are running Linux workloads. Well, good on those people for using Azure to run Linux. That's incredible. I love it. Moss is a senior program manager for the Azure Compute Runtime. To help those folks, Redmond has therefore created new monitoring capabilities we have just released, currently in preview, for Linux VMs running Azure. Microsoft also shouted out to Linux users saying, "We want to know more in depth how your organization monitors Linux servers and challenges you face monitoring those Linux machines." So that's interesting. Microsoft is getting their fingers into Linux, their greasy, grimy fingers into Linux. Again, it all sounds ominous to me.
Don't glare at me. I didn't do it.
No, I know you didn't do it, but you're the one who put this story in here. So.
Well, it seemed interesting.
It is interesting. I'm curious where this is going to go. The story tries to make it sound all nicey-nicey, and this, by the way, came from the Register out of the UK. So I don't know what their stance on Microsoft is. They probably care a lot less about Microsoft than we do here in the States because their reach is not quite that long. I guess we'll see what comes of this. To me, it sounds sinister. There's, speaking of sinister things, there's some chat in the chat room about the previous story about the Oracle Google case about API copyrights, which may affect some of the electronic systems in future cars and may not allow you to repair your own vehicle because the code may be owned by the authors of the code. Yeah, it may be illegal for you to do repairs on your own vehicle if this plays out the way it is.
Well, would that be software repairs or changing the brakes?
Well, I don't know.
Because changing the brakes is hardware.
Right.
Like it's changing pieces, so.
I have a feeling before long the U.S. government will be copyrighting things like brake pads, so you'll have to get them from, only authorized sources, and you will not have license to legally change your own brake pads at some point, but we're not quite there yet.
As long as they're not made by Microsoft, we'll be okay.
That's true. Yeah, I don't want Microsoft making anything that's going to keep me from dying. So.
Yeah, well, Kliwik just pointed out that there's software, anti-lock software, that control the brakes.
They control the brakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, it all sounds sinister. Maybe we should step up to a more positive topic.
Yeah.
Okay, so
let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that. Cheryl, let's read a more positive topic.
Okay. Saving laptop power with PowerTop.
Woohoo!
Yeah. If there's one thing you want from a laptop, it's a long battery life. You want every drop of power you can get to work, read, or just be entertained on a long jaunt. So it's good to know where your power is actually going. You can use the PowerTop utility to see what's draining your power when your system's not plugged in. Utility shows you power usage for various hardware and drivers, but it also displays interesting numbers like how many times your system wakes up each second. Processors are so fast that they often sleep for the majority of a second of uptime.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, and this came from Fedora Magazine, and there was actually the information on the story, which will be in the show notes, tells about how to actually set it up and get it working. So,
no, I know, this is so funny because like Apollo 11 was powered by 3 vacuum tubes and a hamster. And right now, it's like you have so much computing power in your laptop that it's asleep most of the time. Yeah, that's ridiculous, but that is the way.
It's cool, though.
It is very cool.
And the hamster had to sleep too.
That's very true. That's when the vacuum tubes took over.
Indeed.
So I think we have a title for the episode.
And we're all looking forward to that. Very nice.
All right. So moving off, that is kind of cool, though. I might, since we have just purchased a couple of new laptops, might check that utility out and see how our laptops are performing.
Except that this is a Windows-based system and not Linux.
I understand that, but that's going to be rectified shortly.
Okay. Get so, on that.
I'm working on it. I'm working on it.
Because this is driving me up the wall.
It's not like it's the only thing we do in life. All right, moving on to our next segment, Linux in the Ham Shack. I found a couple of stories to put in here before we have an interview. So stay tuned for that for the next 5 minutes or so. The first is a story I found on the blog of Alpha 6 Echo, and this was from earlier this month. He was talking about the Flex Radio Control Knob called the Flex Control, which is actually a hardware device that is powered by some basic software that allows you to easily have access to some of the functions of your Flex Radio SDR. But it turns out that with some clever reverse engineering, he was able to get more out of it. A flex control is the ultimate VFO and radio control accessory for all flex radio systems, software-defined radios, developed by serious contesters but applicable for all types of operators. The ergonomically designed flex control provides the ability to tune multiple VFOs, RIT and XIT, and a simple turn and or press of the weighted smooth action turning knob. In addition to the multifunction tuning knob, there are three multi-state programmable push buttons that you can assign a multitude of radio control actions, such as changing the tune step, RX filters, or CW speed, just to name a few. Unlike other tuning knobs, the Flex Control is not another mouse-like device and will continue to control Power SDR, Smart SDR, or your SDR, even if the active Windows program, note Windows program, is neither Power SDR nor Smart SDR. This is known as the focus issue, and the Flex Control solves it, allowing you to have your logging program or any other program active while interactively operating the radio with the Flex Control. Now, that's very cool, and the software that was released for the Flex Control, written by the guys who created the device, is actually only available for Smart SDR, which is a Windows-only application for Flex Radio. But as I said, AA6E, with some clever reverse engineering, discovered that the interface between the Flex Control and your computer is a basic serial I/O interface operating like a Hayes modem at 152 kilobaud. So it's basically a bunch of text commands going over a serial I/O interface, and using that knowledge, he is actually able to interface the Flex Control using simple commands to operate any device over a serial port. It doesn't even have to be an SDR. It can just be anything you want to control using a paddle-like device with buttons. And therefore, since it's a basic open source technology, or an open technology using a simple transport protocol, you can use this device, which I think costs around $100, to power any project, whether it runs on Linux or any other operating system. And of course, there are APIs that access serial interfaces for all programming languages across all platforms. You can use it for basically anything. And that's pretty cool. And if you want details about that, the link to the article on Alpha Alpha 6 Echo's blog will be in the show notes. And the information about the Flex Control actually came from flexradio.com itself, and a link to more information about the device, as you're supposed to be using it by the Flex Radio guys, will also be in the show notes. Gotta love clever people. And by the way, if you haven't checked out Alpha Alpha 6 Echo's blog, which is at blog.alphaalpha6echo.net, you definitely should do that. He's a very, very smart guy who has a lot of interesting Linux-y type topics.
Yeah, I'm actually looking over the blog right now, and he talks about all kinds of different stuff. It's and quite a few entries, too. Like, you know, sometimes one every day. Sometimes he skips a few days. Yeah, indeed. Very geeky and interesting.
Yep. If you like to dive in head first to some of the topics that we talk about, he is a good blogger to read about and a good ham radio operator, because he gets real down and dirty into the information. All right, the final story we have for tonight is one that I found. It's actually a little dated right now. It came out about 3 months ago, but it was really interesting, and we missed it when it first came out. I got this off of Slashdot. And this was a post by our friend and yours, Bruce Perrins, K6BP, the promoter of Codec 2 and all the other open source ham radio projects. He's probably the premier force in promoting open source for ham radio, after us, of course. But anyway, he posted on Slashdot, or there was a reference to a post by him on Slashdort. Slashdort. Where he says, he being Bruce, says, Chris Testa, Kilo Delta 2 Bravo Mike Hotel, and I have been working for years on a software-defined transceiver that would be FCC legal and would communicate using essentially any mode and protocol up to 1 megahertz wide on frequencies between 50 and 1,000 megahertz. It's been discussed here before, most recently when Chris taught gate array programming in Python. We're about to submit the third generation of the design for PCB fabrication and hope that this version will be saleable as a developer board and later as a packaged walkie-talkie, mobile, and base station. This radio is unique in that it uses your smartphone for the GUI, apps to provide communication modes, contains an onboard flash-based gate array and a UC Linux system. We intend to go for Free Software Foundation Respect Your Freedom certification for this device. So this is SDR for VHF and UHF, which is kind of cool. The interface, it's just going to be a board, so the interface is provided by linking to a smartphone, and it runs Linux. So, like I said, this story is about 3 months old, so I don't know if the third-gen PCB has actually been created or not, but I'm looking forward to find out where this goes, because it sounds like a very interesting project. And, of course, it will be type-accepted by the FCC if they get it released, and it's for 50 megahertz, i.e. at the bottom of the, or the top, I guess, of the HF band all the way up to gigahertz. All in one single piece of hardware. So sounds very cool to me. I'm looking forward to see if this thing actually gets produced.
Maybe it's out already since your story is 3 months old.
Maybe so. That's true. But I have not seen it.
You should check the chat room.
There is already a speaker mic. It replaced the PC. You can do free DV with it. This is Petro who says, are you talking about the SM1000? The SM1000 is the thing for doing free DV, and it does it over HF. Because the SM1000 was done by David Rowe.
It doesn't mention anything about David Rohr, the SM1000 in
the
article.
He said yes.
Trying to find something else on it.
Yeah, I don't think this is the SM1000 project. This sounds like something completely different. Anyway, we should probably move on because we're kind of behind time. Like, it's our own fault, but we're behind time.
Like always.
Yeah. But anyway, at this point, we need to get our interviewee on, so I guess I should try and figure out how that's going to happen. And hopefully he's paying attention and will answer the phone. That's always helpful, right? Yeah. Well, here's some noise.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Your connection's a little noisier than it was when we did the test earlier, but maybe you're sitting in front of a noisy fan.
In an empty room, there's an echo.
The echo we get, yes. So anyway, you sound fine. So here we go. Anyway, this person that we are now talking to is Daryl Little, Kilo, India 4, Lima Alpha, which actually I noticed today when I read it that it looks like Killa. Is that intentional? Or did you
it
just...
It was just totally at random. That was just the call sign I got.
Oh, well, interesting.
But I figured it was kind of cool, so I didn't change it.
It is interesting for, and I didn't know, are they actually assigning KIs in the fourth call area at this point? It seems like really high up in the Ks.
Yeah, well, no, that was 10 years ago. I got that call in 2005.
I didn't know the fourth call area had so many hands.
Apparently we do, because they're like up to the KUs now or something.
Apparently, I live in less populated parts of the country, which, yes, is quite true. Anyway, clearly, we should just move along into stop doing this whole idle chit-chat thing. But anyway, the reason that we're talking to Daryl is because he was recently our ambassador at the Southeast Linux Fest, which was just last weekend. This last weekend, which was like, ended yesterday. You got the stuff that I sent you on Wednesday. You left for Southeast Linux Fest on Thursday, and presumably you set up at Southeast Linux Fest on Friday or late Thursday, I'm not sure which. So why don't you just kind of give us an idea of what your thoughts in general about Southeast Linux Fest for, not for your participation in our ambassador program and doing the stuff for us, but what did you think about SELF itself this time?
Well, I got there Thursday night, so I wanted to set up so I could find a good spot to actually set up the radio and operate during the event. So fortunately, I found a spot right by a service door where there was enough of a gap I could get the coax under the door. and I know from attending it last year that there's a big crossover between the Linux community and the amateur radio community at this particular event. So that's why I thought it would be really good to represent Linux in the Ham Shack. And sure enough, on Friday and Saturday, literally had, at least 50, 60 people each day come by and asked a lot of questions about, operating digital modes, your handouts on the different Linux software for amateur radio was real popular. So it's such a wide variety of interests, and it just fit right in.
Well, that's good. We went to Southeast Linux Fest ourselves the second and third year that SELF was active. This is actually, I think we figured at the seventh year, this was the seventh SELF. The first 2 years were really fun. They were really small, but the group of attendees was really nice. It was good to talk to all of them. So what sense do you get of the like total attendance of SELF this year? How many people do you think there were actually there, not necessarily the ones who just stopped by our booth?
I'm guesstimating there was probably between 500 to 600 people. I know they were talking about they were hoping to reach like 1,000, but just my feeling, there was probably around 500 or so. With the peak being on Saturday, might have peaked up to 600 on Saturday.
All right, that's a fairly well-attended event. And so did you see any of the event other than sitting at the booth? I know you had some hope to go to some of the sessions and stuff like that. So did you actually do that?
Yeah, I did. There was some talks on shell scripting and Python that I got to sit in on. The real fun one was there was a talk on Raspberry Pi hacks, and they were pretty entertaining. I'm trying to think, there was at least one other one I sat in on, but I can't remember right now.
Well, that's quite all right. Now, I know that they were also trying to schedule, I think, a ham radio gathering down there during the course of the event at some point. Did that actually happen? And if so, did you go to it?
I wasn't aware of that. I know on Saturday there was going to be a test session. So there was going to be a VE session going on. And I got a lot of questions about that because they saw your sign or your banner, and they instantly thought that maybe we were the ones that were doing the test session. So fortunately, I knew the people that was doing that, so I got everybody directed going in the right direction. But I don't know that there was specifically a gathering, but there was a lot of social activities going on out in the restaurant and bar area, so I might have missed some of what was going on.
All right, that's cool. So of the people who came by and talked to you specifically about what we were there for, was there any question or questions that kind of stood out to you? What were the people most interested in or any particular aspect of, Linux in the Ham Shack that seemed most appealing to folks?
It was a close tie between just general questions about how to get licensed and basic questions about what is amateur radio, and questions about operating in the digital modes and software defined radio. The people that were already licensed amateurs were like really interested in the digital setup that I had there for demonstration. So a lot of people were like taking pictures of how I had it hooked up to the laptop. And so it was a close tie between that, because a good bit of it was just people curious about amateur radio in general.
Now, you said you were actually working some 20 meter while you were there. You had a 20 meter rig and you had it hooked up both digitally. Were you only working digital, like PSK and stuff like that, during the event?
Yeah, I was just doing PSK31, and ended up logging about 10, 15 contacts during the course of the day.
Were you actually doing that for people who were there attending, like while they were watching and,
Right. Okay. Yeah, they were interested in it, so they would come around, and I had the screen on a second monitor so they could see it, and then I could actually demonstrate how FLDigi worked and actually make contacts while they're watching.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. Now, when we've been to Hamvention, unfortunately, the way it's set up and where we are set up in Hamvention in the part of the arena we're at, it's basically impossible for us to get any kind of a radio signal. So we have never actually had the opportunity to work active radio while at an event. So that to me was really cool that you were actually able to set up and show it like in progress to people who came by the booth. And I was really happy that you were able to do that. And I was also really happy to see the tweets and the pictures and everything of the setup you had there itself. Because when we were doing it, it was actually in Spartanburg, and the year after we stopped going there, they moved it to Charlotte, so we're not familiar with the venue or anything like that. So being able to see how you had it set up and the way you were operating and what you had going there for the attendees was really cool. So I appreciate that. From your own perspective, being there and doing this for us, like, what was your favorite part of it? What was and, you know, following that, what was your least favorite part of it?
Well, I think the favorite part was just meeting lots of people with lots of different background and interests. It's kind of fun to be able to talk to someone that's completely new, and you know, you can like see that they're interested and actually starting to get a little bit excited about finding out more. That's for me, that's the fun part. The only part was just that was on a little bit on the downside. On Saturday, it gets so crowded and it is so noisy that I actually started losing my voice because it was like so hard to talk to people. When you get 600 some people jammed into that space, it gets turns into a mild roar in the background and it gets kind of hard to talk.
No, that's understandable. We have experienced that at Hamvention too, because 25,000 people run through that place, and
yeah,
you know, there's the occasional lull and everything where you get a chance to catch your breath and everything, but it usually comes in waves. People don't come two at a time; they come 50 at a time, and then sometimes right. You get a break in between. As far as your perceptions of interest in the program itself, Linux and the Ham Shack, I mean, was there any specific interest in the show? Or basically,
yeah, there was. It seems like on Saturday there was just a lot more interest in the show. I think Friday must have been just more people just curious, and on Saturday there was more of the actual amateur radio community, and there was a lot of people that were interested in the show on Saturday. I think that was what, a box of 250 business cards. I probably gave away like 3/4 of those cards away, people that were interested in your website and in the podcast. So Saturday was a big day as far as people their interest being expressed.
That sounds good. If you gave away that many cards, then hopefully it will spur a little bit of interest and we'll get a few new listeners out of it, which, you know, is the good thing for us. And being there to promote Linux and amateur radio for the community in general is why we do this. We personally, as the host, would love to be at all these events, but of course we can't because they're all over the world and at all times of the day and night and throughout the year, and we can't be at everything. So that's why we have the ambassador program. It's been in kind of a lull, so I'm really glad you were able to pick it up and do this for us. And I know you're planning on attending the Roanoke Ham Fest when that comes up, and I think it's August. This is the kind of question that's probably going to shoot me in the foot, but would you recommend doing this to someone else who's listening to this? I mean, would you recommend being an ambassador for the show? Is it worth doing? Did you get enough out of it to make it worth your time?
I would, yeah. I would recommend it. Okay. You know, if you enjoy teaching and introducing amateur radio and to others, then it's a real good opportunity to really get out there and meet people and talk to people. So it was just fun. Just being there and sitting at the table was fun. Out of all the people there, there wasn't anybody that was negative or a downer or anything. Everybody was like really interested.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you had a good experience, and I want to express my thanks and the thanks for the hosts here at Linux and the Ham Shack. We really appreciate you going out of your way to do this. I know you were planning on going to the event anyway, and that's why you're willing to help. I don't think anyone's basically jumped up and said, "Oh, I'll just go to this event for you," which is fine. That's absolutely fine. Because I'm also glad that you got to experience some of Southeast Linux Fest itself, because I personally would be disappointed if I went to the event like that and wasn't able to at least see some of the actual event rather than being, stuck behind a table all day. And again, I really appreciate you spending some time there for us. So that being said, I'll open this up to questions from either of the other hosts if they have any. And also, do you have any like thing you would change about the program or any comments you would have about it, positive or negative?
I don't think I'd change much. It'll be interesting to see what kind of response I get at the Ham Fest. I think it'll be more of an opportunity to talk up the amateur radio, the podcast itself. So yeah, it's not really much I would change. I think a lot of people are like the giveaways, and that's, you know, I know that's hard to come up with free stuff to give away, but that's probably just the only hard part is, but not everybody was looking for a freebie. A lot of the people were actually interested in the topic. So that's the only good and bad part, I would say.
Right. Well, I mean, we're always looking for different ways to promote the podcast. Unfortunately, since this is sort of an out-of-pocket endeavor, we don't have the resources that other organizations have to just come up with things to give out to people. I wish we could do that, but we just can't, unfortunately. If we ever come up with something we can give away, we definitely will, because freebies always make it stick in your mind what, you know, what you got. When you look at it later, it's like, oh yeah, I remember that. Maybe I'll check this out. And I would love to be able to give stuff away. One thing I do know, and we were talking about this the other night, is that Linux in the Ham Shack tends to play better when we're talking about events at Ham Fest than we do at Linux Fest. Because when you're talking about something like Linux, which is something you can get for free just anytime you want it, it's hard to promote something that, you know, where you're asking for donations and taking money, when it's something that you can otherwise get for free, whereas right. When you're going to an event that promotes ham radio, where pretty much everything costs money, no matter what it is, it's a lot easier to sort of get over on that, and the people seem to be a lot more responsive to it when you're saying you're pretty much giving something away for free or very close to free. So,
I would agree. Yeah, that's why I'm really interested to see how different it will be at the Ham Fest. So
I suspect you'll have a. Notes. Yeah, I suspect you'll have a very different experience at the Roanoke Ham Fest than you did itself regarding the booth. So, Pete, if you're not muted, do you have any questions for Daryl? Or
no, I was muted, but no, you did a fine job. And nice to meet you, Daryl, first of all, and thanks for being there. I think that's pretty awesome. And it sounds like the event was a great success. 500 or 600 people is nothing to sneeze at in any kind of event these days.
Yes, indeed.
So do you know what the rough attendance of the Roanoke Ham Fest is? I mean, off the top of your head, is it something you've attended before?
Yeah, I've gone the past couple of years. I would say 200, 250. And it's just a one-day event, so a lot of people show up really early. So I know I'm going to have to get there like at 6 o'clock in the morning and get a table set up, because I think the peak crowd is around 8 o'clock in the morning.
That actually sounds a lot like the Ham Fest that I went to here in Aurora.
Say, yeah.
it was attended by probably about that same number of people, 200 to 250 people, and the bulk of everything that happened before noon. So,
right.
Yeah, I expect the experience will be the same or similar, and I hope I do hope that if there are 200 people who go to that event, that every single one of them stops by the booth and talks to you at least for a minute. Because
that's right. Yeah.
So. Anyway, thanks again. I really appreciate that, and I look forward to getting a quick report from you from the Roanoke Ham Fest, which, do you remember the dates of that? Because I don't have it off the top of my head.
It's the first weekend of August.
Okay.
I think that's actually August 1st. I'm not sure.
All right. I'm not sure either, but
yes,
we know
if it's on Saturday, it's Saturday, August 1st.
All right.
Yes, so. Then that would be it, yeah.
All right, so if you're listening to this and you get the opportunity to go to the Roanoke, Virginia Ham Fest on August 1st, that would be great. Stop by. We'll be there. Daryl will be our ambassador once again. Can't say thank you enough, Daryl. I really appreciate it, and I hope you enjoyed self. I really hope you enjoy the Roanoke Ham Fest, and perhaps we will talk to you again after that event.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, and have a good evening. So that was Daryl Little, KI4LLA, our ambassador to the Southeast Linux Fest and to the upcoming Roanoke Hamfest. So if you get a chance to go to that, you should definitely check it out. So with that, we are down sort of towards the end because there was only a short gap in between the last podcast and this podcast, 1 week instead of two. I do have some music, though, so I'll kick off our little music selection for the night, and then the rest of the show is going to go by pretty quick, so buckle up. It's going to go by fast. I'll be interested to hear the comments about this particular track for tonight, though, because I have a feeling reaction will be varied.
Is this more of a Pete tune or a Russ tune?
This is more of an I don't know who the hell it's for tune. It's more towards what the show is accustomed playing. It's heavier, but this song is basically straight out of the mid-80s hair band era. I mean, this group could pass for Motley Crue.
Well, if they're anything like Motley Crue, it might be half decent.
The group is called Black Star. They're from Trento, Italy. This album, or this EP, five-track EP, came out about a month ago, actually. I actually enjoyed every track on it. I thought they were all decent, very, very similar in style and very approachable as a hair band kind of thing. The EP is called From the Ashes, and this particular track is called Close Your Eyes. It's not one of the more popular ones on Jimendo, but it's actually the one that I really like the most out of all of them. So we'll give this a listen, and then we'll talk about it for a minute afterwards.
Tell me, tell me, but don't worry.
Black Star, Close Your Eyes. I actually thought that one was really cool. I liked it.
No, it was all right. Not my favorite. It sounded very 80s. I looked up the band. They don't look 80s. I sent you the picture on Skype if you're interested. They look very modern. I looked up the website. The band was formed in 2007 when the lead guy was only 14 years old. So he wanted to follow in his dad's footsteps and play heavy metal. They started playing covers of Judas Priest, Iron Maiden, Saxon, Metallica, Megadeth, Motley Crue in pubs and things like that. And last year they got their big break. Now in 2013 they got sort of a break when they got to play with Chris Slade, the historic drummer of AC/DC. So the story is kind of interesting. And yeah, they started when they were 14 years old.
I'm sorry. Did you say Chris Slade was the historic drummer of AC/DC?
Well, that's what they say.
Okay. He played on like one album. Come on.
But it was a historic album.
No, there is no drummer for AC/DC except for Phil Rudd. He is the only drummer for AC/DC.
Chris Slade. Well, you know, they got to have a claim to fame somehow.
And, yeah, I guess so.
That's how they got their break, then so be it, you know?
Yeah. Chris Slade, the drummer for a lot of other bands, but happened to play with AC/DC for a little while. Yeah, that's awesome. All right. So.
This comes from the person who worships AC/DC.
I do love AC/DC, yes. But anyway, so I thought that song was pretty good. All of the tracks on that are very like that. So if that's the hair bandy kind of metal you like, then you'll probably enjoy all of them. I just thought that was the best of the five. So. But that's it. That's the track. Black Star, Close Your Eyes. And now we move on to announcements and feedbacks. And this one we get to blaze right through because there are none. There are no announcements. There's no feedback. So so we'll move right on to segment five, which is Cheryl's Recipe Corner. Yay!
Or yay. Something, whatever.
All right. So tell us what we're cooking.
All right.
Be excited about your own corner.
Okay. I'll be excited. I still think that yay. One day there's going to be a whole bunch of feedback that comes in and going, shut her up. But anyway,
no.
back to the recipe. As I mentioned last week, summer is not the time to cook, especially in Missouri. It's hot. It's humid. It's bad. But this item that I picked out this week is perfect from having to keep from slaving over a stove all day. Or you can take it to a weekend barbecue.
Or a field day.
Exactly. Field day.
Yes, perfect.
Well, and they said earlier, field day is like a big barbecue. So there you go. Don't let the number of ingredients in the recipe scare you. More than likely, you'll have all of them in your pantry anyway. And the sauce is what makes this dish so special because it's hard not to like ketchup, brown sugar, and a little buzzard. Wow. All right. And a little butter drizzled over your beef brisket.
Maybe the title of the episode just changed.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, the recipe is for pulled brisket sandwiches. Just make sure that you buy a beef brisket and not corned beef.
I love corned beef.
Yeah, Russ loves corned beef, but
so do I.
Yeah, it just doesn't. It's just not the same.
It probably does not make good brisket. Yeah.
No. But you chuck all this in your slow cooker / crock pot. And let it cook for 8 or so hours, and poof, you have dinner.
And you say all this, awesome. And you warned about the number of ingredients, which, by the way, are brisket, water, Worcestershire, cider vinegar, cloves, beef, bouillon, chili powder, ground mustard, cayenne, garlic, salt, ketchup, brown sugar, butter, hot pepper, and some Kaiser rolls.
Do you put the Kaiser rolls in the...
No, you don't mix that all in there. Yeah, the entire recipe will, of course, be in the show notes, and it will actually explain to you that you put everything else into the mix, and then you put all of that crap on the Kaiser roll. You don't mix the Kaiser roll in.
There you go. That's but, of course, you could try your own variations with a different brisket true. Or different buns or perhaps a baguette and make a really long-ass sandwich.
Right? And if you happen to like different ingredients or you like a particular flavor, this is kind of like flavoring meat, so you can always throw in something else, too.
There you go.
Try that out. The link to the information will be in the show notes, and, of course, the recipe itself will be in the show notes, so give that a try. Have some brisket. Stay outside. Picnic with your friends. Drink something. Eat some beef.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Drink lots of water.
That's right. Drink lots of water. Moving on, we need to wrap up the show, and we're almost done. Yay. Actually, we're doing the social media roundup here, which is about the last thing in the show. And you'll note in this particular social media roundup that there is a significant change. So we'll see if anyone picks up on it.
Okay, so this week in the social media roundup, we had no donations and subscriptions. We had on Google Plus, we had Andrea Patrizia Botchinger. I murder names. Dominique Bolado, Pikes Peak Radio Amateur Association. Ooh, we've been to Pikes Peak. Yep. Let's Talk Rock Radio Show. On Twitter, we had Pass the Joe, Miguel Lobos, and HPHVPALOMO.
Let me go with HV Palomo.
Okay. I'm guessing. Whatever. Yeah. Nothing on YouTube, nothing on the mailing list. And we had merchandise sales this week. Bob, W0TUX, bought something from us. Yay. Yeah.
Yep. An excellent call sign, Bob, W0TUX.
From K5TUX. That's
right. Are you guys brothers?
No, we're not brothers. And that's the thing. That is, everyone has correctly spotted the difference. We had merchandise sales. It's actually a month old now. I didn't realize that it was back in May that Bob bought something from us, but he did, and you can too, and the information about doing that will be coming up shortly. But the best part about this outro is we can't do it right now because I don't have a soundboard, so the show's over, guys.
Yeah!
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Linux in the ham shack.
Welcome to another edition of Linux in the Ham Shack with Richard, KB5JBV, and Russ, K5TUX.
Linux in the Ham Shack.
Jack.